The Marching Roundtable is proud to be an official media partner of Drum Corps International.
This podcast is sponsored by Marching Arts Education, found at marchingartseducation.com. There is a video version of this podcast conversation available to view at no charge at marchingartseducation.com.
But our go-to, if we have to rally the fan base, nothing does it like Boomer Sooner does. And so if you're hearing it over and over again, chances are it's a really close game or it's a really big blowout and we're just making a lot of big plays. You know, if it's in between, you're going to hear a greater variety of stuff. But we have found over the years that that's what our fans tend to respond to.
We all watched the big game at the Rose Bowl this year between Oklahoma and Georgia, cheering for the bands in the parade and at halftime. Both groups did a tremendous job and made us all proud. However, there was a lot of talk, and even newspaper articles written, about the cheers that the bands played during the game. Did it seem they were playing the same song over and over? I know I had that impression. So on this podcast, we talk with Brian Britt of Oklahoma and Brett Balcom of Georgia about those cheers, how they decide what to play, and the great pressures and demands put upon them and their students. We also share advice you can use with your group to make sure your band is seen as indispensable to the school, the team, and the community.
If we remember the fact that, no, you don't have to be here, and they don't have to fund you, and they don't have to give you time to play, it changes your perspective a little and reminds you that, you know, the value that's there is the value you and your students create.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have to earn that every day. As soon as you feel like you've arrived there, that's the beginning of the end. I mean, it's what's next. You know, that's kind of become our mantra. Hey, that was great. What's next?
People wanted to know, so the Marching Roundtable is taking you straight to the source. Find out why you heard Boomer Sooner and Dies Irae played so much, and why it was so smart and mattered so much to those teams, those schools, and those fans. College football cheers on the Marching Roundtable.
This podcast is sponsored by Marching Arts Education, found at marchingartseducation.com. Introducing a great new destination and resource for everyone in the marching arts. A place where educators can learn the skills and find the information they need to be more successful. Top experts in the activity present live webinars, videos, and coursework. Plus, it's an interactive atmosphere where you can ask questions and join in discussions. Marching Arts Education is also the home of ColorGuard EDU, the first online educational platform created by ColorGuard educators for ColorGuard educators. Be one of the first to sign up on the site and you'll receive a lifetime discount at the website and an exclusive limited edition t-shirt. Find all of this at marchingartseducation.com. Perhaps the most exciting, marchingartseducation.com is a place where you can share your own expertise with the world. It's a platform to improve and enhance your brand with the infrastructure to help you create and distribute the information you have to share, increase your visibility, and release your expertise into the world. Get more information about this opportunity at marchingartseducation.com.
Everybody, this is Tim Hinton. Thanks so much for listening and watching. I'm so happy to be talking to these men today. Brett Balcom. Brett, how are you?
Great. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing great. Also on the line, Brian Britt. Brian, how are you?
Great. Thanks. Good morning.
So you guys, thank you so much for stopping your busy lives at the universities, Oklahoma and Georgia, to talk with us. This has been such an interesting conversation in our whole activity about you guys at the games and the cheers you played and the reactions. I think it's so, so interesting. And so I so appreciate you talking with us about it. And so first off, Brian, tell me sort of just fill everybody in. Everybody knows who you are, I think. Tell everybody sort of what your job is at Oklahoma, et cetera.
Sure. I'm the Associate Dean for Special Projects, and the Director of Athletic Bands here at the University of Oklahoma. So my primary responsibility is the marching band, and I also conduct the symphony band, which is our second concert ensemble.
Fantastic. And Brett, tell us about what you do at Georgia.
I'm Associate Director of Athletic Bands at UGA. I help with the marching band. I'm Associate Director of the marching band. Run the basketball bands, the gymnastics band. and teach some courses in instrumentation arranging, songwriting, and whatever else they want to throw at me.
Gymnastics band? Like, I know you guys are big time gymnastics. You really have a pep band.
Every single home gymnastics meet. Yeah, that may be true at Oklahoma too. I'm not sure because they're number one in the country, I believe, right now, in fact. So
we do have a really solid gymnastics program, both on the men and women's side, and we make special appearances for special events they do, and you know, like larger meets and things. It wouldn't surprise me if we ended up doing more. Just great programs, and our students enjoy playing there.
Very cool. So first off, you guys were both at the Rose Bowl. I want to tell you, fantastic job, because everybody was talking about how great the band sounded. Okay, so first off, in the parade, both groups sounded phenomenally. So congratulations, you guys. Was that fun, or was it like really super hard?
Brett, why don't you go ahead and go first?
Yes and yes. It was an absolute blast. I don't hesitate to say that it was probably the most momentous weekend in the history of our program. The Redcoat Band had never been to the Rose Parade at all. In fact, the University of Georgia had only been to the Rose Bowl once, January 1st, 1943, but the band barely existed at the time. And plus, you're in the middle of a pretty massive war, and so it just wasn't something that was a priority. So our first trip to the Rose Parade and Rose Bowl in general, both really momentous occasions. You may have figured this out already, but the Rose Parade was, I think, without question, the most widely viewed performance in the history of our program. So just for starters, with the importance of both the game and the parade themselves, just incredible weight, but also a blast. The Rose Bowl and Rose Parade people are incredibly organized, and I think almost single-handedly are largely responsible for the maintenance of substantial band traditions. I don't know. What do you think, Brian?
Virtually the same. We were fortunate to go 15 years ago for the first time. I think we were the first non-Big Ten, Pac-10 at that time band to be a part of things. And it was really a great experience. This time even more so, just because the game was more greater importance, you know, being part of the CFP. But, you know, the parade, as Brett said, it's just such an amazing outpouring of just the best things about our human nature. I mean, as you go 5.5 miles down the parade on the first day of the new year, people are 30 and 40 deep on either side of the road every step of the way. And anyone that's done enough parades for long enough know that's not the case. It's usually you hit some dead patches, but it was really exciting to be a part of that. And again, same thing with just millions of people seeing us in that environment. Just really grateful that the Rose Bowl uses its status as the, quote, granddaddy of them all to negotiate contracts that ensure that collegiate marching bands stay at the center of who they are in terms of their game pageantry and the things that contribute to the overall atmosphere, not just of college football, but of the Rose Bowl in particular. And the last thing I would say is just to echo Brett's comments. I mean, we're well-traveled as the Redcoat Band is. We go to a lot of great bowl games. A lot of them are really well-run. None are better run than the Rose Bowl.
Well, I just think I want to make sure you guys know that, like, after the parade was over that day, all over Facebook and Instagram and everywhere, it's like, wow, did you hear what the band sounded like? Everybody was talking about the UGA band. Everybody was talking about the Oklahoma band. You guys made a really big impression. So I just want to make sure you and your students knew, like, everybody was like, nobody sounded like those guys. They were very, very impressed. And, of course, the fantastic thing about the Rose Bowl halftime is they show your performances. It's so great that they do that. I know that's in sort of the contract for the TV and the bowl game. But both bands, so impressive, so well represented. I was really proud. You know, I thought you guys did a great job. So anything you want to say about the halftime since we're talking about that?
Well, I think one of the things I would say is I would encourage people, if they felt that way about the halftime, you know, we're really quick to complain when it doesn't happen. You know, everyone's calling ESPN when it doesn't happen. Please call ESPN and say thank you. You know, we had a similar thing with the Big 12 championship. They aired our band playing the entire national anthem at the beginning of the game. And yes, it's like, please, please contact the network, contact Fox and tell them thank you. Same thing with the Rose Bowl. I would say, please contact ESPN and just say that you're grateful that you got to see that and you would like to see more of that. Because that matters. I mean, if there are eyeballs on the television, that's more revenue from advertising, what they can charge. So it behooves us all to speak up and say, hey, thanks for doing that. And to your comment, Tim, about the social media response, my phone was dead by the time we got to the game because I just kept getting text after text after text and instant message just from all kinds of folks that were just really incredibly gracious and kind with their assessment of how we performed.
I can't agree enough with what Brian says about making sure that ESPN and Disney both know how important that is to eyeballs and viewers. In fact, Brian, if your situation is anything like ours, we just finished our postmortem with the Rose Bowl and with our own athletic association. And one of the things we had to be very, very conscious of doing before we made the first complaint about anything was to make sure they know that everything they did for the bands, but especially that 2 minutes for required for both bands at halftime just meant the world to us. And indeed they did. And I noticed the same thing on social media. It blew up, and especially among our own alumni. That's one of the amazing things I think about athletics that sometimes doesn't really get credit like it should is, Here's a situation where two band programs were elevated in a way that really I don't think anything else could, largely because of the results of a sporting contest. It's not something we like to talk about a lot of the times, but the truth is, I think in both our cases and in many others, here's a situation where athletics truly elevated a part of a university in a way that I'm not sure there's any other way to have done. And we're very appreciative to our athletic association, and as I know Brian feels about his own university administration, it's really been an incredible experience. David Starnes warned me before that parade. He said, you're gonna turn that corner, and you're not gonna be able to hold it in because it's so overwhelming seeing all those people. And I'm like, you know, whatever, David. And boy, I'll tell you what, we rounded that corner, and you just see this wall of people. And he's right. It's really overwhelming and an absolutely amazing experience. If anybody out there ever gets the opportunity to participate, and obviously there's an extensive application process, but I can't speak highly enough about the overall experience of the Rose Parade and the Rose Bowl too. Just absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
Well, so first off, I want to say one more time, thank you guys for doing such a great job, because I felt like you represented our activity at such a high standard in the parade, certainly at halftime and at the game. And so there was all this discussion. First off, the game was huge. Everybody was watching this game, right? So you guys had to know there's all this pressure because this is such a giant game. Everybody's watching. I was watching. Everybody's watching. So after it was over, there was a lot of conversation about the cheers. And that's why we're here to talk about it, is all the cheers you played. I started like checking with my friends, like they keep playing the DSA right over and over and over. Like what, like we started having this conversation, like I'm hearing that a lot, you know? And so I understand. And the reason I want to have you guys talk about it today is I understand. I don't know how in the world, like, first off, anybody that's watching, both these men deserve a giant raise. I'll say that first, because how you guys navigate the responsibilities. I know that like your team expects things from you, your band students expect things, your alumni expect things, the crowd expects things, TV probably dictated things, the bowl game people probably dictated. Like, how in the world you possibly navigate all of these forces is beyond me. So I want to talk about that part of it too. Like, how, you know, what were your responsibilities? When were you allowed to play and when not? Did they tell you what to play? You know, like Brian, did they tell you to play that same Oklahoma song? What is it? Boomer Sooner, is that the name?
That's the one.
Right, all the stuff, like, that's the only song they know. And I'm like, I know that. That's, first off, I know that's not the only song they know. And number two, there's a reason that band keeps playing that over and over. And the same with you, Brett. I even, you know, I texted you guys. And I was like, I know there's a reason that you keep playing that.
Yeah.
So I want you guys to talk about it. I just gave you, like, 20 subjects. But primarily, let's start maybe with the cheers. Why those? Tell us about those cheers and why you played them so much. Maybe we'll start there. Whoever wants to jump in.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and go first. We play Boomer Sooner a lot. It's our fight song. If we're fighting, we're playing it in some form or fashion. Really, the two songs that our fan base responds the most to are Boomer Sooner, and then our state song Oklahoma, and we have different versions of them. You know, some really short, some a little bit longer, more expanded. But Boomer Sooner is really the one that stands out. And over the history of our program, there have been a number of games when we've been involved where just this relentless belief in our team and playing the fight song Boomer Sooner over and over and over again has been believed to conjure up what is known to many as Sooner magic. And there have been instances where the band has shown that relentlessness and coaches and players have felt that belief, and it's helped to change the momentum of the game. Most notable in that was when I was a freshman here at OU in 1983, we were at Oklahoma State and behind 20-3. At that point, just to try to abbreviate the story, our director was escorted from the stadium for not having a sideline pass, along with the drum major and the graduate assistants. And his instructions to us as he left, or start playing Boomer Sooner and don't quit till we're ahead. So we did for about an hour. And when we were on offense, we would bring it down, you know, as the quarterback went into center and brought it back up. We played it all the time. This is back before the rule now where, you know, when the center gets over the ball, you have to stop. Well, long story, somewhat shorter. On Monday, this is before the internet, obviously, there were signs posted all over campuses, Pride of Oklahoma, meet in the band hall today. No outside rehearsal. We thought, somebody did something, we're in trouble. Well, what happened was Coach Switzer, Barry Switzer, came to rehearsal to give us a game ball, and he looked at us and said, if you guys hadn't believed in us when we were down that far, we never would have won the game. So here you go. Game ball signed by everybody on the team and the coaching staff. It's still in my office. Also, a couple years ago when Lincoln Riley was our first year new offensive coordinator, the offense wasn't clicking. We were at Tennessee in Knoxville. You know, 105,000 fans, about 3,000 of which were ours, and a 125-piece pep band, and we ended up coming back in double overtime to win that game after having played Boomer Sooner a lot and not giving up on the team ever. And that time, Coach Stoops got every single student in the band a game ball. In fact, I'll show you. That Monday, his secretary called and said, Coach wants to know how many students you took to Knoxville. And I said, we took 125. She said, okay, thank you. Didn't say anything about it. Two Mondays later, I got 125 of these to give to my students. So the idea is that it's the fight song. We're fighting. We're going to play it. And that people wonder, like, the other team just scored. Why are you playing? It's like we're trying to incite our fans, trying to incite our team. It's relentless support for the team no matter what. Win or lose, we're there until the time runs out. And that's really the long and short of it for us.
Yeah, that's some amazing background. I didn't know a lot of that. That's phenomenal. With us, I guess we might have a little more variety in the music we play in the stands much of the season, but not much for sure. We're maybe just a little more situational. We don't play much on offense at all. That's largely by request. It's we want to stay out of the way in terms of sound. We don't want to interrupt the huddle or anything that's associated with it. Now we'll play on first downs, and we've got three specific things we play on first downs. But largely, the idea here is that we're trying not to get the fans too into the game at that particular moment. And I think it's probably fair to say that Georgia fans, these are the same people who go to the Masters. So they enjoy watching quietly a lot of the time. Now, well, on defense, it's big football fans know that you want volume, especially at home games. You want to do anything you can to affect the opposing team's offense. That could be just, you know, just intimidating them, which I think is the biggest deal, but also making it difficult to operate so they can't hear each other talk, change plays, audibles, et cetera. Snap counts and so on and so forth. And again, we can only play until the snap, but you can certainly cause a crowd to become louder. And that is really the focus of what we do in between plays pretty much throughout the game. When we're on defense, anyway, anything we can do to get the fans to make more noise is generally what we're going to do. Now, third downs are a focus for us, and they have been for most schools, because that's the most pressure packed moment, or at least the most consistently pressure packed moment. And lots of schools have different third down traditions. That Imperial March is one that a lot of schools play. You'll hear the lick from Mars pretty frequently. I guess it was the late 90s. Somebody said, you know, we should play the good old traditional Dies Irae as our third down thing. And well, okay, that made sense. And so we started doing it, and it didn't really catch on. We, you know, we did a lot of things back in that didn't necessarily catch on, but it also takes several years to get something going. And finally, it became a sort of a third down staple. I don't know if it's Pavlovian. I don't know if it's I'm not really sure exactly what the sort of psychological principle behind it is. But what I do know is, and I can't scientifically prove it yet, but I will do it one of these days. And I thought real hard about taking a decibel meter to the national championship game just to prove a point, and then got a little busy. But it's obvious to me when we don't play Dies Irae, our fans don't respond nearly as well. They're not as loud. And so normally I said, you know, we play it on third downs. But when we got into the SEC championship game, we were playing a team we'd already lost to. In fact, we gotten whooped by. We were playing in our, you know, in Atlanta. So it's not our hometown, but we certainly knew we had more people there than our opponent did. And we wanted to do whatever we could to get that place bumping. So on first down, the very first down we had on defense, we let her rip. And sure enough, that place lit up. So we did it again on second down. And same thing happened. Third down, same deal. And throughout that night, we probably played it. This was, again, this was SEC championship game. We probably played it 40 times. And the result was much to our liking. So we got to the Rose Bowl, and sort of the same thing was going on. I mean, here, this is the biggest game I've certainly ever been involved in 25 years. So the national semifinals, you want your crowd as into that thing as they can possibly be. So the first thing we did on defense was played it. And we tried a couple of other things here and there. And it was obvious to me that they were not as effective and our crowd wasn't as into it. So we immediately went back to the old tried and true. And it worked out pretty well for us that night. And it almost worked out well for us the next week also. Now, it won't be that way when we get back to Sanford Stadium next fall. We'll go back to a little bit more variety, but as soon as we get into a big moment where we need our fans to be loud, we'll go right back to it again. One thing worth mentioning is, and I'm sure that, in fact, I think Brian indicated this in what he wrote in response to the USA Today, was we know that the fans at home are sitting here listening to us going, oh, seriously, you know, they're getting tired of it. But what the fans at home can't tell is what the level of crowd volume is in the stadium. I mean, it just takes a producer or an engineer somewhere turns a knob and knocks the crowd volume down, but the band is still responding to what's going on in the stadium itself. But if it weren't working, we wouldn't be doing it. And I think the same thing is probably true of the Pride.
Yeah. We, you know, we play after virtually every play something, and we have a rotation of about 16 different things. Some of which are based on Boomer Center, Oklahoma. Many are not. We've got some bigger, like big hits or big plays that are made. We'll play some things that are unrelated to those. But our go-to, if we have to rally the fan base, nothing does it like Boomer Center does. And so if you're hearing it over and over again, chances are it's a really close game or it's a really big blowout and we're just making a lot of big plays. You know, if it's in between, you're going to hear a great variety of stuff. But we have found over the years that that's what our fans tend to respond to. And if I had been contacted, that would have been a really easy answer to give. In fact, I think that would have been a really fascinating article for USA to have done, is about, you know, hey, we noticed there's a lot of schools that are playing the same thing incessantly. I wonder why that is. You know, and I'm sure there would be interesting stories like the two that you just heard. You know, you just right off the top of my head, USC, Florida State, Tennessee are three. You know, when we've been there, we hear that relentless support. And, you know, for one side, it's like inspiring, and the other, it's like, oh, Lord, please deliver me from this. And actually, both of those outcomes are part of what you're looking for.
You know, Tim asked about, you know, when we're able to play and when we're not able to play. And so here's a little bit of that experience as well. Typically at home, I assume it's the same at Oklahoma. We're in contact with our promotions department throughout the game. And so we're trying to make sure that those, and they are very important, the promotions that happen, the advertisements that happen, they happen uninterrupted. Those, as annoying as some people might think they are largely responsible for the amount of support that our schools get. So we have to make sure we're respectful of the contributions of those individuals and corporations, et cetera. But at the same time, we want to make sure that our home environment is a home environment and that it is a tough place to play. So so we're in contact with somebody at home throughout the game. At the SEC championship game and at the Rose Bowl, and then again at the national championship game, the same thing is going on, but now you're cooperating both with a promotions type department and the other band. One of the things I found interesting that was different between the Rose Bowl and the national championship game was at the Rose Bowl, you go to a media timeout after most scores, and so this team that scored is going to play their fight song. And then you go into whatever promotions there are, and then at the Rose Bowl, they went back to the band that had scored to continue playing throughout the rest of the timeout. And there was a good bit of the first half where Oklahoma was absolutely taking Georgia to the woodshed. And I said something to the Rose Bowl guys. I said, if this keeps up, we're never going to be able to play again. And it really caused us some trouble in being able to rally our fans. We could not get those guys into the game there for a while because we couldn't play a thing. At the championship game, it's quite a bit different. The team that scores, they play their fight song, then they go and do the promotions, and then you alternate one time out with the to one school, the other time out to the other school. And it did seem to be a little bit easier if we were behind, which was largely in the second half of that game, to at least get something going again, whereas the other way it just didn't feel like we could get anything to happen at all.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's really challenging, you know, at a championship game venue or at a bowl, is there are certain protocols that each bowl has, and I get it. They want to make sure that no one's stepping on each other. But you know, particularly late in the Rose Bowl, you know, I looked at our representative and said, you know, there's a certain point where we're going to have to agree to disagree on this, because I've got a fan base that is expecting us to try to rally them, regardless of what the script says. You know, and you don't run into that at home. At home, everyone's on the same page. We've got a great relationship with our athletics marketing people, and we meet weekly with them, just as I'm sure Brett and your guys do, to make sure we're on the same page about what's going to happen in different situations. We primarily play as the game action dictates. You know, we're engaged in in-game performance versus the entertainment piece that happens at halftime or during media timeouts, particularly later in the game if the outcome has become more clear what the outcome of the game is going to be. Then it's really more of, hey, this is exciting. Let's enjoy these last couple minutes and, you know, maybe get the audience to sing along or something or whatever. But you know, in a really competitive championship type environment, you just want to do all you can to make sure that your fans feel as engaged and they're doing all they can to support their team. And really, I thought the Rose Bowl did a good job of balancing that. There were just a couple of times, particularly later in the game, when you're like, "Hey, we're going to have to go ahead and play. I'll apologize in advance," and everybody was fine to work with on that.
That brings to mind another question Tim asked about, and that was sort of what the, you know, the varying responsibilities that we encounter and how many sort of plates are spinning at a given point in time. And for me, that's one of the most fascinating things about working in college athletics and with band in particular, is how many different clientels you have. I mean, you're obviously dealing with the game itself, and you're trying to make sure that it's as that at home it's an as intimidating or difficult an environment for your opponent to play in. And on the road, you want to make sure that your fans are as vocal as they can possibly be to make sure that you're, you know, well represented and that you are helping your team in that moment. But, you know, in a heartbeat, that can change. You go to a commercial break, maybe you're up 21, and it's no longer about that. Now it's about finding a part of your crowd that wants to have a good time. And let's face it, everybody's there to enjoy themselves. But even there, you've got, you know, students who have types of music that they like. That's going to be completely different from what somebody my age is going to like. There's a Steely Dan poster behind me, and my kids don't have any idea who in the world that is. But you know, there's a whole generation that gets it. And then the maybe over 60 crowd, they've got a different set of music they like too. And finding a way to engage every single one of those, plus take care of your players and your team and the game itself, I've always found to be a challenge, but a really welcome challenge that gives us an opportunity to play with a lot of variety. I don't know what your experience has been.
I feel the same way, you know, and we find that when we're targeting our shows, you know, kind of mapping out what the year's going to be like, and we'll have a certain target demographic with a given show, and the emails will reflect that on Monday, like, this is the best show ever, do more of this, and sure enough, you know, class of 74, guy really liked the tribute to 8-track tape show. And then you get something from class of 54 guys like, this is awful, I can't believe you sleep at night, you know, this is, you're horrible at your job. You know, it's like, sorry, it wasn't your week. And so, so a game is sort of a microcosm of the season. You know, so if you've got 10 timeouts during the game, my hope is that everyone's going to like eight of them, two of them they're not going to get, and then two of them of the eight that they liked will be like, that was really cool. And I feel like if we do that, then if everybody likes you the majority of the time for different reasons, then they're going to support you no matter what. But that is the challenge. And the other big piece of that is I'm grateful that we're able to interface and collaborate with our athletic marketing people and what the video board can do, because it's good to do some different things and to take the audience a different place, because it changes the timbre, it changes the focus and what's going on. But you can't take that with you when you travel. And if that's the only thing your fans respond to, you're in trouble in an away environment. So fortunately, our guys get that, and they've kept the band at the center of rallying the fans, and so I'm really grateful for that.
We've experienced something very similar here. I worried for years when sound systems started getting strong. Ours, in fact, coincided with the 1996 Olympics. Everything changed in Athens and in Atlanta, and not the least of which was the audio system in the stadium. And boy, I was just terrified that here it is, here's the replacement. And in a strange way, I've always thought that our biggest opponent in the stadium is that sound system. Now, with that said, much like Brian said, we have a wonderful relationship with our marketing and promotions people, and they have done a great job of making sure that the traditional part of game day remains, and they keep us, you know, in the loop, and they give us something to do. But you know, that's a way that I've thought about it for a while, is whatever we need to do to keep that thing not playing, let's do it. Now, I also fully understand that the sound system can do things we can't do. You know, with the advent of hip hop, it is really hard to rap through a trombone. You know, you can't, there are some things you cannot emulate about a lot of the music that the kids these days love, and that's okay too. But if you do think about trying to make sure that you're doing whatever you can to engage that crowd, give them something to enjoy, give them a reason to come back next week besides the ball game and the tailgating and all the fun stuff, then I think at the college level, then you've done your job.
Yeah, and I think an important point to follow up on that with what Brett's saying is, you know, the video board, pretty much once you've paid for your video board, you've paid for your video board. Having a college marching band is expensive. Having a really good college marching band is even more expensive, and it's not going to get cheaper. And so we've got to make sure that the value that we contribute is readily apparent. And so being there in those crunch times and showing that support, win or lose, rain or shine, you know, snow, whatever else, that's something a video board can't do, especially when you're away from home. And so we want to make sure we're doing that at the highest level we can, so that we're engaging the fans, whether we're at home or elsewhere.
And that's something that I think about not only in terms of our school, but in terms of our activity and our medium is to make sure that bands everywhere benefit from the fact that we're doing what we can to make sure that the band remains integral to this experience. And I know that happens with you guys, and it happens a lot in the SEC at schools where I have enjoyed games before. Bands typically do a great job of keeping fans engaged and trying to make sure that this activity remains important, because it's important to us, but it's easy to forget sometimes that not everybody, you know, grew up in band. Mm-hmm. And so we got to make sure that we take care of everybody in the process.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly.
Well, I'm glad that you said that, because, you know, we're always alarmed when there's these new stories of some football stadium somewhere that's not going to let the bands do halftime or whatever, or they're going to have one band at halftime, whatever. And everybody gets up in arms, and usually they back down, but which I think is great. So we need to keep letting them hear from us. You guys already made that point. Let them know that it matters. And I think you both have pointed out something real. I just want to point out one more time, is that having the band as part of the atmosphere at a college football game, and actually at any football game, is a giant part of what the experience actually is. It's not the same thing if you don't have that band over there playing those cheers coming out. Like, the whole experience that a marching band brings to any kind of football game is huge. So I'm so happy that you guys are doing it, and I appreciate the good work you're doing and how hard you're working at making yourselves valuable. And that would be one of the takeaways I would say for any director that's watching this conversation, is you have to make sure that you make your marching band incredibly valuable to the entire school in every way. And I know that when I was a high school band director, many times my football coach would come over and thank me, you know, whether it was a parade at school or even a pep rally at school. Like, we made ourselves incredibly valuable and integral, and that's what you guys are pointing out. But the other thing I'm glad that you're pointing out, it's a lot of work. Like, you know, you guys, all those cheers and choosing those songs, and there's, Brian, as you were saying, all those different populations that you have to make sure they have something during halftime at some point. Like, that's a lot of work and planning, but I'm so glad you guys do it, because it's really paying off.
Well, one of the things I think it makes college football so cool is it's multi-generational. I mean, like at our games, and I'm sure it's the same at Georgia, we've got toddlers, and then we've got 9-year-olds and everything in between. And it's like the families getting together for Saturday afternoon. I think that's one of the things that makes it such a strong bond, because people are there because they love the university, and they're there because they love the, you know, Sooner football. And that's a different dynamic than just selling a product or entertainment. You know, there is an entertainment piece, but it's much deeper than that at the collegiate level. And I think the universities that have done the best in terms of building and holding onto their fan base, other than winning, which is the best marketing strategy, but it's just making it known that you appreciate, you value them, and that it matters that they love what you do and where you work. That's a really big piece of it. And I think one of the things that I've always tried to do the different places I've been is to make it where the band becomes indispensable. I mean, we are the soundtrack to what's going on. And that's the service component of what we do. I mean, we basically have 3 points to our mission. One is that we have to be first-class ambassadors for our university and state wherever we go. Secondly is relentless support of the team. And then thirdly is to engage and inspire the fans through what we do on the field. All three of those are really important. And if we let go of any one of them, our connection with the fans is going to suffer. But I think the one where it would suffer the most is if we didn't support the team relentlessly. You know, our charge to our students is we're not going to lose. We may just run out of time. But when you turn on the radio or the television, it should sound like we're ahead by 5 touchdowns from the amount of energy that you're putting out there, period.
You couldn't agree more, especially I like that comment about the college football being intergenerational. And it's certainly as true here as it is anywhere else. In fact, there are students in our band right now who have great-great-grandparents who were in one of the early bands in the late 1900s. So it's not just a football thing here. It's even a band thing. And I know it is in a lot of other places as well. But there are, you know, generations of people. There are almost generational parking spots where this family has been tailgating beside the same tree for 50 years. Or, you know, the renewable season ticket thing. These are my seats, and they kind of are your seats because you've been in those things for generations. And it does become bigger than just a game in a lot of ways. At the end of the day, it still just is that. But there's more to it than that for sure. And I think remembering our responsibility in that we basically provide what I think of as a sort of a noble part of a brutal activity is really important. I also think, you know, when I think about the responsibility we have both to the school and the activity itself and making sure that we remain valuable, I'm getting in the middle of a season sometimes, and maybe it's, I don't know, right before Georgia, Florida, which is the end of October. I'm tired, and you guys all are too, and I'm just exhausted, and something will get the better of me, and I'll start feeling a little bit of entitlement about, well, this university owes us this, or the athletic association owes us this, and it's possible that they do, and it's never helpful to think that way, no matter what happens. If I can, yeah, and I say me, but this includes Dr. Robinson, the director of Redcoats, and Rob Akridge, our other associate director, and all of our band staff, if we remember the fact that, no, you don't have to be here, and they don't have to fund you, and they don't have to give you time to play, it changes your perspective a little and reminds you that, you know, the value that's there is the value you and your students create.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have to earn that every day. As soon as you feel like you've arrived there, that's the beginning of the end. I mean, it's what's next. You know, that's kind of become our mantra. Hey, that was great. What's next? How are you going to make it better? And that's, I think that keeps you from fossilizing. You know, just this week, this Thursday, we'll start our leadership selection process. And that's a big part of the questions we'll ask is, okay, what was good? What could be better? You know, how are we going to grow that? And, you know, what's the next great group of shows that we can do? How do we select those? You know, so you're just constantly not reinventing yourself, but I think just ensuring that you don't get stale or allow yourself to become obsolete.
Further variations on a theme.
Well, and I love that you just said that, because that's actually, I've done 700 podcasts at this point with the Marching Roundtable. It's been so great. I get to talk to all these people. But every time you talk to somebody that's like super talented and successful as a designer or creator or instructor or whatever, they say that all the time. You know, like, I can't rest on my laurels. What's the next thing I can do? They're always pushing themselves for more. You know, if the minute, like you said, the minute you get complacent, you're in really big trouble. Mm-hmm. We're about out of time here, but I do want to say one thing. I did a couple podcasts with Walt Simonson from USC and Luis Casillas from UCLA. Everybody can check that out. It's podcast 473 and 474 at marchingroundtable.com, in case you want to see those. And they talked about, you know, sort of the way their jobs work. But I did want to point out that on Facebook, I'm glad you said this, Brett, because I'm pretty sure it was the SEC championship game where I first was like, holy cow, I don't want to hear this year again, you know? And I remember no offense, guys, because I agree with you. I don't want to be one of these social media pylon guys. But I went on Facebook and says, why is the UGA band only playing the DS area over and over and over and over? But what was interesting was people started going, "Is it so obnoxious?" And Walter Simonson from USC, who I talked to, chimed in and said, exactly. In other words, you created – like I was reacting just like the players from the team that you guys beat were reacting, like, this is obnoxious. So in other words, you did your job. And as you said, it's hard to know when you're sitting at home watching on TV what the environment is like in the stadium. So one of the reasons I want to have this conversation was, now that everybody that's been watching this or listening to this, you can clearly see that we need to give these guys the benefit of the doubt. And if you are a newspaper guy who likes to write snarky articles, I would say the same thing. These guys are professionals. They totally obviously know what they're doing from this conversation, and we already knew that. And so I liked your point, Brian. You know, wouldn't it have been an interesting article to say, let's find out why they're making these choices and talk about that? So maybe there's a lesson there. So such a fantastic conversation. I guess – anything you guys want to say before we go in closing about any of this stuff, or is there a topic I missed? Brad, I'll ask you to go first. Anything you want to say in closing to wrap this up, or a topic that we haven't addressed?
Sure. Well, I think one of the things I repeatedly find at bowl games is how cool it is to interact with another band and university's culture. And that's, to me, one of the greatest gifts of being at a school where right now in particular football is going well. You get, you know, it's one thing to travel and see somebody that you've seen three or four times, but this is the first time Oklahoma and Georgia had ever played each other. And it was a really, really incredible opportunity, in addition to, you know, the Rose Parade itself and the game itself and all the other great things that happened to us. But to interact with the band and the staff from such a legendary program, I know our band got better as a result. And I know our students they just really benefited in unimaginable ways from the interaction with the Oklahoma band. And I know that I became a better band director as a result. So my appreciation to the Rose Bowl and to Brian and his staff as well.
Well, and I would echo that. I think one of the most important things about what we do versus what our coaching colleagues do, we're fortunate there's not a scoreboard to dictate success or failure. You know, obviously our hope is that our fans wouldn't trade for the other, and I'm sure it's the same the other way. You know, if you've got your own fans turning on you, that's a bad thing. But you know, I think if both bands feel like they've done the job that they came to do, the bond with their fans remains constant, and then we grow in the process from getting to see how other great bands do what they do. That's so valuable because you can sort of get on an island. You know, traveling bands are becoming less and less common during the regular season. I think in some part due to economic necessity as well as other factors. But, you know, the postseason conference championships and bowl games, we get a chance to see great bands like the University of Georgia. And I know it does create a little extra incentive to make sure, hey, let's make sure that we're doing our best out of respect for the other group as much as anything. And then we look forward to seeing and hearing their best as well. It makes this a really special profession to be a part of, where you get to continue learning from your colleagues as you go along through the journey, and your students do as well.
You know, it's something that just popped into my mind, so I don't want to hijack the end of the conversation here, but Tim mentioned the fact that, you know, there was some critique going online and so on and so forth. In fact, I remember one of my very dear friends responding to Tim's critique on Facebook, and I saw it and I went, oh, just chill, man, it's fine. At some point you get used to the fact that no matter what you do, there is going to be somebody who doesn't like it, and it's because they can't be in that unique position. And it's okay for them not to like every single thing that goes on. It's, in fact, it's unavoidable. It's kind of like the phrase I've heard about a significant other. It's one thing if she's yelling at you, but it's when she stops that you got a problem. And boy, if they stop responding, if somebody, you know, if everybody's like, whatever, ambivalence is the thing you really want to avoid.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think I don't have a problem with, I really hate when the Pride of Oklahoma plays Boomer Sooner this much or whatever. When you start seeing personal attacks on students, that's why I stepped in. I mean, I get paid to be where the buck stops. I'm the grown up. If they want to come after me, I am fine with that. My mama still thinks I'm pretty awesome. My wife and my daughter still think I'm pretty awesome. I'm fine with that. The reason I responded the way I did was so the students didn't feel like they needed to defend themselves and to try to redirect the conversation, frankly, to there's a lot of great things to talk about right now, whether it's the conversation we're having right now or, hey, there are four amazing collegiate marching bands participating in the college football playoff. What goes into that? Let's talk about the hours that these kids are spending to get ready. Not like, oh, poor us, we work hard, but hey, it's a really cool story. We hear so much about, you know, the bottom 10% of college students that don't do what they're supposed to do. How about these guys that are just really busting their tails, getting ready to go out and represent their school and their state? They're going to go take a 2-hour and 10-minute march, and then they're going to go do their game day job. Not many people would be willing to do that, let alone be excited and fired up to get to do it. They see that as a get to instead of a have to. What an amazing story to tell. And yet we just missed an opportunity. And so that's what I really wanted to point out. And I meant it. I'll pick the dude up at the airport and give him a shirt and take him to the game. We'd still love to do that.
I thought you were a fantastic ambassador for our whole activity in that response, by the way. It was well said, well reasoned, and it's got to be pretty tough for that guy to feel anything other than compelled to find out more if he actually read what you wrote. I thought it was well done.
Well, I appreciate it. And I hope so. I really, my hope is that we can get out of the same stereotype. I mean, whenever you see a marching band featured in a commercial or, you know, in the background of a movie, it's generally not real flattering. And it's not accurate. We need to tell the real story. And it was interesting, you know, like 2 days later at breakfast, my wife's like, hey, I just looked at Facebook. Did you know that there's like 9,000 likes and 3,500 shares? And that's when I realized, you know, I was really trying to speak up for everybody, you know, in particular my students, but, you know, just stop picking on the marching band kids. I mean, because that's really what that was. I think the headline was inaccurate. It should have been, who wants to take a shot at the band? Go. It would have been a little simpler and more truthful.
Agreed.
Well, thank you for that great article. I'm glad that it got shared so much. It was really well done. Thank you both for the fantastic job you're doing and for representing. I was so proud to be like a band guy during that whole thing. You know, like all those big games that I was watching, I just thought, man, these bands are killing it. They are all super on their game. And even the cheers, like, now I understand better. I'm so glad we did this. And it totally makes sense. And like, I was a band director, I know you have your job. I really like that you guys pointed out, you make a difference in the outcome of the game. That is one of your, if not your main job. And that's huge. And people need to remember that. So I love that we had this conversation. Do you guys ever want to talk about more stuff about what college bands do? We would love to help present that, because I think people, our whole thing is get the information out there, let people learn, let them know. You're both awesome. So Brett and Brian, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today. It was just awesome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. We really appreciate the opportunity and appreciate you shining a light on what our students are doing.
Awesome.
Help your students be the best they can be. We're here to guide you through the process from Marching Arts Education and Color Guard EDU.
There are many other great video interviews which you can access at no charge at marchingartseducation.com. This includes interviews with many of the top design teams from last year's DCI season. You can hear from Scott Chandler, George Hopkins, Matt Harloff, Paul Rennick, Michael Gaines, David Starnes, and many others. If you find our podcasts helpful, please share them with a friend or colleague who you think would benefit. They can hear our podcasts on iTunes. Just search for the Marching Roundtable in podcasts there, or on our mobile app, which is available in the App Store. You can always listen or download at our website at marchingroundtable.com. And while at the website, search in our podcast archives for almost 700 other podcasts. And keep up with upcoming releases and recordings that are happening by following the Marching Roundtable on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can receive our biweekly newsletter by signing up for a free VIP membership at marchingroundtable.com. We hope you'll support the podcast on our Patreon page. Even a small donation will really help us keep sharing this information with you. Find out more at patreon.com/marchingroundtable. Thanks to Brian and Brett for joining us and being willing to explain these important topics. And thanks to you so much for listening. If you're a business that works with band directors, marching bands, color guards, or drum lines, you should consider sponsoring an episode of the Marching Roundtable. Our listeners are the exact audience you're trying to reach, and with thousands of podcast downloads each month, it's a great way to directly reach your target audience. For more information, click on the Sponsorship Opportunities link at marchingroundtable.com or email Tim at tim@marchingroundtable.com. You can grow your business and help support what we're doing here on the podcast. Thanks.